Hey everybody, my name is Damara West and I'm founder of Be Well Beautiful Woman, where we help women to center their healing and liberation so that they can lead and live lives on their own terms. You have joined me for the Women Who Write to Liberate Summit, which is comprised of female writers and those that support the craft of writing to inspire women just like you to find their authentic voice and use it in ways they feel inspired to, including, but not limited to, writing their first book. And today I have Savia Wade, author of Birthing Liberation, How Reproductive Justice Can Set Us Free on the lineup. And let me tell you a little bit about this amazing woman. Savia Wade is a Black queer CEO investor. She's an educator. She's a full spectrum doula and an expander of Black luxury. Ooh, I love the sound of that. She's the founder of Birthing Advocacy Doula Trainings, an accessible and inclusive training program for community care workers and for The Village, which is a nonprofit providing doulas no or low cost to low income and marginalized communities within the San Diego community. As a coach, a board member, an investor, an educator, and someone with immense experience in program development and providing that support for organizations all over the country throughout the birth and reproductive health industry, you are in for a real treat. Every part of Savia's work centers on liberation of all people through reproductive justice, which is so much in alignment with her first book. And we're going to be talking about that in detail. And her newest business, yes, right? Because she's a serial entrepreneur and it does not stop. It does not stop. This body of work is called Loads of Pride, and it's a new frontier in the trucking industry, centering jobs for BIPOC and queer individuals, and aims to show just how connected it all is. Once again, her first book just launched, Birthing Liberation, How Reproductive Justice Can Set Us Free, is now available. And you're going to have all that juicy goodness right in your inbox to easily connect with this work. Savia, sis, thank you so much for being here today.
Hey, you're so good. You're
oh like, my gosh. Thank boom, you. Boom, boom. Thank you.
I'm like, man, you're reading so well. I'm like, I would be like, and
thank you. I really appreciate that. So let's dig right in, right? Because we have a lot of juicy goodness to talk about today. Yes. So one of the things that really stood out to me about your bio is that, you know, you really appreciate and have connected every single fabric of your labor of love, right? You've made it make sense. So help mm-hmm. us understand how it's all connected. How does it make sense to you? Because so oftentimes people say, well, gosh, you know, you're everywhere. But the reality is that there is a method, not to the madness, but a method to the purpose. So talk to us about mm-hmm. that.
And let me just sit over. You can't preach today.
We about to have some fun.
Even a sermon. Yes.
Yes. Thank you.
So a method to the purpose. You know, when I think about like all the like labels and identities and things that like in my bio, it wasn't planned, you know, like it wasn't planned. It was like the identities or the things that we talk about that I hold like in my work and in my life and in the like the universe that I've built, it's all been a part of my actual process of growing into who I am now. You know, I came into the world, we're coming to my like really my purpose as a doula, not knowing that I was going to be a CEO, not knowing that I was going to open a nonprofit or I was going to start BADT or that I was going to start doing these things or that I will own a trucking company. Like none of that. I knew what I wanted for myself as far as like, I always knew I wanted to be my own boss, period. I knew that. But as far as the things that came with that, investing and, you know, helping people with develop, like all that wasn't necessarily something that I saw for myself, right? But I knew more so about how I wanted to feel, right? Like I knew like in 10 years, like when I was like, I'm 34 now, when I was 21, 22, I knew how I wanted to feel. I didn't necessarily know what would help me to feel that way. Mm-hmm. And so when I look at all those beautiful things that you named, I also look at it like, oh yeah, that's me. But also I look at it as like, it's all a reflection of my journey.
Yes.
And I think another piece of it is that, yeah, especially being a woman, you hear like you can only have this many things kind of like in your orbit. You can't have this and that and this and that. And I don't think that's true. Like for me, if you're into human design, I'm a manifesting generator. And so I like to do a lot of things at once. Like I can focus on something for a day or two, but the next day I may not want to focus on that. And that's just how it is for me, right? Or I'll find something I'm like, my body, my brain is like, let's do this. But the next day may be something different. So I've learned that for my personal journey, it's important for me to have many things for me to move with. But I think what I know for me is that there's always a consciousness about pace, right? So I can have it all, but all of it can't go at 100% energy the whole time, right? So some may move at 25%, some may move at 60%, some of it might be on 100 because of whatever's going on in my life. So I move with the consciousness of the pace of where my interest is. And even in the ways that I have like set up my schedule and my team has set up my schedule, it's been very much with the idea of I give myself the permission to move in and out of things. I give myself the permission to say, today I'm going to focus, or this week I feel really driven about this one thing. And then when I don't feel necessarily driven or I need to kind of like sit and let that like, you know, fester and kind of build that passion or that go again, I move to the next thing that I feel really driven about. Yeah. And I feel like that's part of also like my liberation practice. And like, I can tell myself, I was excited about this. I'm not excited anymore. Mm-hmm. or I need a break from that and move to the other thing. And so that allows me to hold the pieces that I hold and be a true reflection of myself as I move through not just my professional work, but my personal work as well.
Yeah. So there's so much that I appreciate about the response that you just provided to us, right? I mean, just this idea of knowing yourself, knowing how you operate, and embracing that as a result of that, you are going to have a lot of interest. You're going to be impacting the world in a myriad of ways. And so often people feel like they have to choose one, right? And the reality is that any person that we know that is has some kind of notoriety within their own right, they're serial entrepreneurs. They have their hands in a ton of different things. And so usually the people that have these beliefs, they just don't have the embodiment yet. And I'm going to say yet, because what I believe is that we can embody anything anytime that we choose to.
For sure.
Right?
For sure.
But they don't have the insight, the movement yet to really appreciate how it's all connected. And
it's all connected.
Yes.
Like, when I went into the investment world, I was like, what am I doing here? It's not like, but I knew I was interested. And my idea around like moving to the investment world was like, if I could understand better how money works and how it moves and where it's at, I can bring that right back to reproductive justice.
Yeah.
Like,
yes.
I can learn about how to build sustainability, right? Like even the conversations with people that I have in my life, like it's a myriad of people, you know? Like it can go from your local porn star, honestly, to people that are running multi-million-dollar companies, right? Mm-hmm. And everyone in between. But for me, it's like I learn from all of those people. Mm-hmm. So when I see myself dipping and diving, I let my intuition and my interest guide me without having this thought of like, well, if I go into the investment world, I have to become like the owner of a big corporate. I don't have to do that. I can come in here for a second and learn something that's so valuable that moves this other piece along, you know? So it's always about letting yourself, allowing yourself to move and to groove and to go with your intuition, knowing that it's always going to come back to you and improve whatever you're working on.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I'll never forget years ago going for this leadership program. And as they were interviewing me, they said, oh, you know, you just jump around everywhere. And I said, well, if you take a really close look, what you'll realize is that all my work is about transformation. And so mm-hmm. to you may think that I am just jumping around, mm-hmm. trying things on. It doesn't make sense, but it makes sense to me. And if you can mm-hmm. really see me, you would see that all this actually makes sense. And I like that you said, give yourself permission To jump in and out of things as you feel led to, and knowing that everything can't have your energy. You know, my mother used to say, jack of all trades, master of none. And so, yes, you can do a lot of things, but it might mean that this thing that you want to do, you can't actually do it just yet. Right. But just tuck it away, because when we're given an idea to do something from our intuition, from our higher consciousness, from universe, God's source, we're being led to do it for a reason. Right. But timing, as we know, is everything. And and I think that is in part what you've offered us, right? You know yourself enough. You trust yourself enough to be able to make it make sense. And make it work in the way that you feel flow to do so.
Truly. That's, yeah, that's a very good point. Even before I was working for myself, I used to work, like, every year I would move to a different job. Like, and my mom, you know, my mom is, like, we were 20 years apart. So she comes from that generation of, you know, you work somewhere, you stay there forever, you retire, right? Which is what she did, which is great for her. But she was always, like, in my early 20s before I worked for myself, or in my 20s. She was like, you know, you go from this job to that job and this and that. And I'm like, I don't, even at the time, like, I wasn't even always, like, aware of what that all meant. But I think that's part of the magic of, like, one, the people outside of you are not going to understand it. So if you're looking for that to happen, probably not going to happen. Right? Yes. And then the other part, too, is that even you within yourself may not understand why this is pulling you this way or why this is happening this way. But if you give yourself the permission, right, to go into that space and just trust that this is a part of my journey, it doesn't have to make sense to me or anybody else, right? But if it feels good and it's giving me the feeling that I need to feel, then it's where I need to go.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I love that so, so much. And you're inviting us to trust the process, to trust the journey. And that, and one last thing I want to say before we jump into the next question, you said something that was really powerful and simple, that you knew what you wanted to feel. And so often people will say, well, I don't know what I want to do with my life. I don't know what my purpose is. And I love that you identified, gosh, I just want to feel this. And I'm open to however that is going to come to me. And you're inviting us to think about a different pathway by which we can get clarity on what our life's purposes are. Not our purpose, but our purposes are. Because there's multiple ways that universe, God, source wants to use us.
For real. And I think for me, like, I know when I feel how I want to feel. Like, I know when I start to feel levels of frustration, or I start to feel resentful, or I start to feel, you know, existential about, like, what I'm doing or not doing, I'm like, that's not how I want to feel. So I'm going to lean into something that literally in my body makes me feel good. And sometimes that hasn't made sense to me the whole time. I'm like, why am I working at this job? Or why am I doing this thing? Or whatever. But I'm like, oh, now I can understand that it was about the feeling, right? More so than understanding just, like, the physical world about around me.
Yeah. Yeah. This is so good. And before we dive into birthing justice and your body of work, something you said, you refer to your liberation practice, right? And so often we talk about a wellness practice. And so I love how you have framed it, and which is very much connected to your work and the language that you use and the spirit of your work. So talk with us about how you see a liberation practice as different from a wellness practice.
Yes, 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 yes. So for me, and this is such a good question, for me, a wellness practice is centered on the maintenance of yourself, right? So you want your body to not hurt, so you're doing yoga. You want your brain to be clear for the day, so you're doing meditation, right? And those things are great. Like, I promote everyone to do that. Like, that's something that I, like, consistently try to aim for as well. But when I think about a liberation practice, I think about that in a way of not just maintenance, but also, like, thriving, right? What does it take for me to thrive? And that doesn't mean, right, I think when people think of thriving, they always go into, like, this kind of, like, financial space, or like, I just have all this in the world and I need nothing and I need for nothing. And I don't know if that's ever true, you know, like, even people that are, like, financially well off, they're usually not doing too good up here, right? Because they don't have everything that they need, right, or want. So for me, a liberation practice is always like aiming for how do I get to the more free place in the ways that I move on a daily basis and also on the long term, right? So a daily basis may be, you know, I'm taking time to, for 30 minutes, feel my grief that I felt around whatever's going on, right? To like let myself be sad, to be in that space. And that could be a daily practice. But I also think there's long-term practices in the ways that you create boundaries around your time, your energy, the people that you're in relationship with, right? Around the goals that you want to maintain for yourself. Those to me are like longer term liberation practices. So for me, it's all about, again, wellness being like the maintenance of self, which is great, but liberation being your practice being like the goal of how do I want to feel now, next year, when my life is done, like, how do I want to feel? How do I want to feel about my life when I look back? Right. And that to me is more of a liberation practice.
Oh, that's such a beautiful distinction. And, you know, in all the interviews I've done, all the wellness and liberation work is the first time that I've heard it framed this way. And I love that it's so centralized on the feeling, right? Because we know that feelings, like, you know, they're in the driver's seat, you know, and I say often that, and these are not my words, of course, but if you control your mind, you control your emotions. And if you control your emotions, control your actions. And you know, a liberated place, as you've offered us, is being able to create space, right, for whatever might show up for you so that you can work through and get back to that place of feeling your best. And so
I see like a lot of people who focus on wellness, which is great. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with wellness. It's great. But sometimes I feel like wellness, sometimes, not all the time, there's an emphasis on it because it's reactionary to I burnt myself out or I haven't implemented boundaries that keep me in a more liberated space, right? Like it's kind of, how do I get back to myself after I've done this thing and now have to get myself back to wellness, right? And if you're practicing wellness on a regular basis, it's also like getting beyond that point of just like getting myself back. But I see a lot of focus on wellness around that. Like, how do I get myself back to this space of how I want to feel based on these other things? Where like liberation is like, how do I implement the boundaries and the things so that I don't have to get back because I'm always there?
Well, and this is so good. And before we talk about, you know, what exactly birthing liberation is, I think what you have offered us is the difference between a reactive state and a flow state. And if we are showing up to practice with the sense of being free, being fully free, in order to do that, it requires us to integrate, right, liberatory practice in every facet of our life all the time. And what I
all
find,
the time.
All the time, yes. And what I find people is that they'll get in and it will work. And then they'll say, well, why isn't it working? And I'll say, well, talk to me about your practice. And every time the practice has been lacking, right? And I'm like, well, if you want to get back to the flow state, you want to get back to feeling good, you got to go back to the practices. And
and that's no like maintenance, right? That's maintenance. Like me, I just had a conversation with Lama Rod Owens, who's a Buddhist minister, a Black queer Buddhist minister. And we were talking about like, when we talk about that flow state, like you're saying, like people get to the flow state and they feel it, they love it, it's great. But then they feel like that's the end point. And it's like, no, there's also the maintenance of that flow state. Okay, so if you want to stay there, right, the practice of liberation and whatever that looks for, like for you has to keep going. You can't just, oh, I feel good now, let me stop. No, it's like you have to keep it going to actually maintain it so that it becomes more of your norm than not.
Yeah, this is so good. So talk to us about what birthing liberation is and why it's important for all of us to keep it at the forefront.
Yes. So my whole thing about, I'll just start at like reproductive justice is for me, what I tie everything back to. Reproductive justice, I think, you know, a lot of people hear it and they're like, oh, it's about people having babies. And it's like, actually, no, it's about people having babies, not having babies. It's about the people who carry babies, who don't carry babies, literally everything, right? It's about the water that you drink. It's about your environment. It's about the transportation in your area. It's about your ability to get to what you need to be resourced. It's literally about everything, like everything. So when I wrote Birth and Liberation, it was important that I spoke to everyone. Because I was like, you might not be pregnant, but someone in your family is going to be.
Yeah.
You may not have the risk of, you know, dying in childbirth, but I can pretty surely tell you that someone connected to somewhere is going to be impacted by that in your presence. Whether that's someone that you work with, whether it's someone that's, you know, already connected to you, whether it's a stranger that's having a bad day, you get into this interaction with this person, think like they're being such an ass, right? But really, they just went through something terrible, right? So it's like, how do we tie all this together? So in the book, we do start with the aspects of birth. We talk about the disparities that are currently happening specifically for Black folks. And we talk about history, and we talk about the present day. We ask the question, like, do they really differ? And then we also get into trauma, right? What is trauma? How does that live in your body? Do you have any recognition of your trauma, right? Do you ever take a seat with your trauma? How does that impact your life, right? And if we're talking about liberation for ourselves, it is our responsibility to personally liberate ourselves. And that will only be mirrored and duplicated in our collective. Right. But that whole process, it's not just like sunshine and rainbows. Right. Like, I'm like the first one to tell you, like, I'm not the person who talks about liberation or even birth in this way of like, it's so great and everything. So no, it's gonna take some things.
Yeah.
It's gonna take some rupture and repair. It's gonna take some hard feelings. It's gonna take some looking at yourself. It's gonna take some readjusting the relationships you have in your life. Right? It's going to take all these pieces. So how do we do that in an intentional way? And how do we make that a part of our liberation practice? Right? So in this book, I really hope that people can learn about the history of our world, and especially specifically for Black folks, but also to learn about themselves. And the way that this book is written for everyone of every race. It's written for everyone and everybody. It's written for the person who has a child, don't have a child. For the person who works on birth, who doesn't, right? It's written for everyone.
Yeah. Yeah. And I appreciate that you are inviting us to expand the conversation, right? So oftentimes, as you started with, it's very singular when people even think about reproductive justice. It's just one thing. And I love that your book comprises the totality of exactly what it is. And the individuals that need to be considered most in the fabric of liberation, right? And doing that in a really unapologetic way to help us to lean in more to having a stake in this, right? Because the reality is that we all have mothers, or at one point we did, and you know, and aunties, and you know, daughters, and you know, and men, right, in their role in that, right? And so I cannot wait to read this body of work. And you know, my goal, as I shared with you before we started, is to make sure that every person, and I know you said it's for everybody, right? So great.
It's for everybody.
But at a minimum, every person working in the birthing justice space, in the women's empowerment space, takes time to digest this expansive body of work and to assess what is my role, right, within the fabric of this body of work to amplify this, right? To help to make sure that we're liberating other people, which, and we know that the liberation of others is also liberation for ourselves.
Yes, right. And I think it's important to name that in my work, you know, I have a very specific audience and community, right? Because I'm like inclusive and full spectrum. And like, you know, that's not everybody's apple pie. You know what I'm saying? but you know, even in the book, it's like, I'm not only writing this book for my liberation, I'm writing it for the people that don't even like me. Like, right? For the people who look at me in disgust, probably, honestly, right? But like, I always look at it this way, is that if everyone had what they needed, a lot of these barriers around the ways that we break each other down wouldn't be there, right? And when we think about trauma, intergenerational trauma, and generational trauma, the things that we see in this current plane of the physical world, it's so combative, right? It's so all that, but it's because people are in need of resource, right? And I think we have to be more open-minded to what that resource is, because it's easy to look at someone and say, well, you have a lot of money, right? You have this, you have that. So like, why would you be combative about the liberation of other people, the equity of other people? But they're in need of some type of healing.
Yeah.
They're in need of some type of resource and probably don't even recognize it within themselves, but that just comes out as anger. That comes out of that comes out as divisiveness. That comes out, right? So in this book, I also like really try to help people to aim to like look into themselves, but to also that looking into yourself with depth and intention gives you the ability to look at someone else with more curiosity and more compassion.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Understanding that even with all the words and things that are being spewed and the actions that are being taken, that the reason why they're in this space is because they're not liberated and they're searching for it.
Yes.
And they think that the way to get the liberation, which is incorrect, but they think the way to get the liberation is to limit you even more.
Yeah. And, you know, I say often that anytime that you can look at someone else and judge them, right, for any identities that they hold, your humanity is fucked. And that's it. Because we are not designed to be separate from each other. It's not even in our human design. And yet we have been socialized because of, I'm sure, many things that you touch on within your body of work to see each other as the other rooted in these identities. And, and so I really appreciate what you said. I'm writing this book for everyone, hoping that you will raise your consciousness, hoping that you will also heal as a result of all of this junk that you're showing up with, because you too have been impacted adversely and you just don't know it yet.
Yeah, like if we can all, right, and I think it's something that some communities have a harder time doing than others, but if we can all like decolonize our understanding of value, and we understand that we're all valuable without these like physical things around money, power, this, whatever, if we actually could like decolonize that, right? Like how much more meaningful would it be to understand that I am valuable as I am right here today, right? I am valuable in my experiences. I am valuable in the ways that I just exist, right? Yeah. And if we all felt that genuinely, we wouldn't have this this need to other, this need to like, no, you're lower than me, or you're this, or you're that, right? And so, yeah, that's like how I see. That's some of how I see the world.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and what you just described is really the epitome of liberation. And, you know, it's a good segue into the next thing that I want to explore with you. You referenced your journey earlier, right? To really step into all parts of yourself. And we know that that's not easy in general, right? But particularly when you hold identities that have historically been judged because of that particular identity. So talk to us about your liberation journey, right? And how you have been able to step in fully to each of the unique parts of what makes you you.
Yes. I mean, in my book, I don't talk about all the things. I just talk about a few things that have happened to me, health-wise, being Black in the space, being a woman in, you know, medical spaces, people underestimating, undervaluing me, and the hardships that that caused, you know what I mean? Like the frustration that that has caused. And I think, you know, for me, it really was something I had to, there was a lot of unlearning that had to happen. I remember being in corporate spaces. Oh my God, I hate being in corporate spaces. Oh my God, so much. But I remember being in corporate spaces and like people having an issue with me, specifically white people having an issue with me anytime that I was more of myself. right? So if I like wore my hair in braids and I like, you know, was giving melanin, was giving like pride in myself, I can see the deflation that was happening for them in their system around like, don't like that. And so I started to question that, you know, I started to really sit with that. Like, why is that? And I also knew that there was two choices that I really had in the process of dealing with that. It was like, I'm either going to hate myself or I'm going to love myself more. And so those are the only two choices. But I also felt like in order for me to love myself more, I had to get out of a environment that wasn't made for me. Like, simply wasn't made for me, right? And I also made a choice that I just didn't, because it wasn't always that I like hated my actual job functions. It was just like I hated being in environments that didn't love me. Right? And so I made the choice to get out of that. And I'm not saying that that's everyone's choice, right? But even when I started to work for myself and be more in those spaces, I remember I went to this one event where I was working for myself, and I still in my head was like, I have to wear professional clothes, right? Because that's something I had learned, that in order for me to be acceptable, in order for me to be seen as valuable, I have to present in a certain way. So there was a lot of like unlearning that has happened, like layers and layers of unlearning that has happened over the years. And there's also still learning happening now, right? So I think that it's been like a process for me. But one of the things that was very intentional about this process was like the choice that I'm going to love myself, and also the pure understanding of when we talk about history and when we talk about what has happened specifically to Black people, specifically Black women. I was like, I really wasn't supposed to be here right now. And when I have that acknowledgement and that awareness of like, people really didn't want me here, and I'm here, and my people are here, right? And I also had the blessing of knowing my, you know, my mom, my grandmother, my great-grandmother, and my great-great-grandmother. So being also witnessing all that lineage and witnessing the storytelling and the things that they went through, I just feel like I have to live it the fuck up. You know what I mean? Like, I have to live it up. Like, I have to. Because what they went through so much shit so I can get to this point.
Yeah.
And so like it's my job. It's my purpose. It's my gratitude to them to live the most luxurious, Black ass, liberated, fun, full of growth and experience life that I can live.
You got me moving here. I mean, just that word luxury. You have me at luxury. You have me at Black luxury, right?
Listen. Like,
honey, and we're going to get into that in a minute. And, you know, this is really powerful because I imagine that moment that you decided that this place is not a place for me and I'm not going to contort myself to fit into this space. Because if I contort myself to fit in this space, I am literally killing myself in order to survive in an environment that is actually harming me, right? And so I imagine that there are people in this space that are listening to this talk that resonate with this, right? Because I don't think that you can be in spaces that are culturally not created for us and not feel the brunt of it. And of course, you know, what we recognize is that, again, socialization is a very real thing. So this is not just messaging, of course, that we get from white people. We get this messaging from people from all walks of life.
Yes, color, for sure.
Us feel like we've got to dim our light, quiet ourselves. We can't do this. And I'm sure that you have had countless conversations also with, you know, Black women who has said, you can't do that, sis. You can't say that, sis. And it's like,
yeah.
Who says I can't, right?
Listen, yes, I have to, because I'm like, I'm very open. So like, even the space where I'm like, I remember I was first going to like quit my job, whatever. And like, I was telling people that were in my community, and they were like, like, you know, everyone's, I was dating someone who was like, you would tell me, you know, what your plans was, and I just didn't believe you. And but her reason for that, she was like, I had never seen a Black woman do any of what you were talking about. So I just never thought that it was possible. And when she knew me, this is when I was like really struggling and like, you know, still living in a corporate space right on that line. Then she was like, so when you were telling me this, I just didn't believe it.
Well, and you know what just struck me about what you said is that even when we have those contentious moments with people, when we choose to be us, we are actually providing space for them to liberate because they don't know, right? We know what we know. And what we believe is success, oftentimes that pathway, that traditional pathway can be a very painful pathway. Mm-hmm. And I think the times that we're able to really step in and to latch on to the true parts of who we are, that's actually where the magic flows. That's where the gold mine is. You wouldn't have been able to write Birthing Liberation if you hadn't have left that space, right? So you didn't know then that this book was coming, but if you hadn't have left, you wouldn't have been able to give us this gift.
Period. I was just thinking about that the other day. I was like, you know, if I didn't make those shifts that were very scary, very like, girl, we'll see what happens, you know, and the struggles that came with that, right? Like the hustle that came with that, I wouldn't be where I'm at now if I wouldn't have taken that risk, right? And it was also a risk that no one could tell me or provide for me any type of security of what was gonna happen next.
Yeah.
There was no
blueprint.
Yeah, like there was no, it was just like, I'm going to do it and I'm going to see like what happens. And I think about that often, like even now looking at this book and like seeing just different pieces of myself in it, I can remember where I was mentally in that, you know, space of hardship, honestly. And I can remember like those moments where I was like, where's my, I don't get it. You know, like when is some type of reprieve going to happen? Like when does that happen? You know? But I also, in those times for me, in my personal space, it just felt like I mattered more than any of that.
Yes. Yes.
And so I knew that it was going to come with hard work. I didn't give you like a million stories with, listen, chaos and like things that come up, and even at this time, right? Like the chaos that comes with that. But also, I can give you so many moments of celebration of things that I never saw coming.
Yeah.
That were and still are what I hold on to in the times of thinking, even now when I go through, you know, those moments of like, what's going on or whatever, I'm like, you know, I remember first getting my book deal. You know, I remember my book agent reaching out to me and like, you know, being interested. And like, I remember the first time my business has passed $500,000 in revenue in a year. You know, like I remember these things that like years ago, and not that far away, but you know, years ago, I was like, how could this be possible? Because for a lot of people, my story doesn't make sense, right? Like, I don't have any degrees. I don't have a formal education in business. I don't have, all I've really like built, like not all, like it doesn't matter, but my drive had literally been, how do I feel? And I love helping people.
And that's what is so substantial about this body of work and you delivering it to us, because you're inviting individuals that are listening to this talk to reimagine what's possible for their lives, regardless of where they're at, regardless of whatever education they don't have or whatever blueprint that hasn't been provided. And the fact that you're saying, like, I just wanted to focus on how I feel. And I know people are probably thinking, well, that's just too simple. But in all reality, we make things so much harder than what they are. And you are inviting us, based on your own liberation, to choose for ourselves what we want to feel, and staying anchored in that feeling and trusting the journey, right? Because I imagine mm-hmm. that even when you said that $500,000 mark, that there might have, I don't know, but for me, there were times when I wondered how I was going to pay a bill, you know, quite honestly. There were times when I didn't have a car. There were times when, you know, I was working in a third shift job, 60 hours a week and getting up, the, you know, leaving my shift and going out to the community college to finish my mm-hmm. associate's degree, right? So I love that you are saying, and no minimization, right? Because you have built this within your own right. You don't, there's nothing to prove. There's nothing to prove to anyone. You've done it. There's no amount of education. There's no amount of money. There's no amount of prestige. But the reality is that the money, the prestige, all of that, it's going to come because that's not your driver. Your driver is liberating self and liberating the world. And from that place, really? Oh my gosh, like there's no limit. There's no limit to what we can
create. There's no limit. From that, like when people are like, what are you? I'm like, I don't think there's anything that I can't do. I think that it'll take hardship. You know, you got to work, you got to learn, you got to do whatever, but I don't feel really limited. I think there's like logistical things that you think about, like, well, if I had $5 million, I'd be able to do this. But like, I also don't ever feel like I can't get there.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Because if you want that $5 million mark, it's coming, right? It's coming. So as we get ready to wrap up, and girl, I could like, sis, I could literally, I almost called you girl. And I'm like, I better not call, this is a woman, right? This is a woman. This is not a girl, right? Let me not get checked in this interview. Okay. But as we get ready to wrap up, and you alluded to it earlier about some of the things that happened during your journey to get your book published, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's only 3% of the population that ever even, you know, birth a book into the world. So talk to us about that journey. You know, what was that like for you? And what advice do you have for people who are looking to write their first book?
Yes. Oh my God. I came into it so green. Like I had never thought of myself as a writer. Like I just had never. And initially when I did think about writing a book, one of my friends had mentioned it to me. I was like, I'm going to self-publish. That's what I thought I was going to do. And then my friends, like, they were like, no, like get, and not because anything's wrong with self-publishing. So I would say the first thing is really deciding how you want to publish your book, right? Do you want to go traditional, hybrid, self, whatever you got going on? Deciding that off of two, like, what is the impact or the support that you need, right? In that process. Like, some people are like, I can do self and I can self promote and I have the time and the ways to do that. I ain't that person. So I'm like, I want somebody to hold my hand and tell me what's going on, right? But the process for me was I got my book coach, Nikki Vandekar. She really helped me to move through the proposal process of like putting my pieces together, which is like, damn, the proposal is a whole damn book.
That's real.
I was the proposal is a whole damn book. You want me to write a chapter, write this, competitors. Da-da-da. What are we talking about? So that was the process. That took a few months.
Yes.
Then from there, I sought out my agent. So I started sending my proposals to different agencies and people. And the thing I would say about that process, I did get an agent within like a week or two, which is not always how that happens. That was kind of quick, especially for like a first time writer. But the thing that I really learned in that process of getting my literary agent was making sure that you're working with the agent that wants to keep your book the way that you want to keep it. Mm-hmm. So like working with the agent that understands your mission, understands the way that you speak, understand your viewpoints, understands like who you are authentically. And they're not, because I talked to a few agents that were like big name agents that were interested in my book that I know could probably get me on a bestseller situation, but they wanted to drown out what I was trying to give. Mm. And I was like, no, I don't want my book to be digestible. Yeah, I want my book to be what I want my book to be. So I ended up working with Laura Lee Mattingly from Present Perfect. And I also just love like all the people in the agency are bomb as women. They actually have 98% women.
Wow.
And they're all like, you know, the Boundaries book that everyone's into by Nidra. she's one of them. The like social justice, environmental justice, like everything is very like themed and on brand with like who I am as a person, like a place that I would be proud to be on a list with. You know what I'm saying? So did that, went to the whole like re-edit of the proposal again.
That's a process.
It is a process. I'm like, I ain't even write the damn book yet. So there was that. And then after we finalized that, we sent it out to possible publishers. Within a week, I had interviews with two publishers. One of the things that was also really helpful for me in that space was like really deciding who do I want to see my book? And also, how do I want my book to be handled? So I think a lot of times people think like, I'm gonna go with these big publishers because they put out, you know, whatever. But in reality, I was like, I don't want to be just a little doo-doo on the thing because Prince Harry is putting his book out. I don't want that. Like, I want my book to be treated with respect. Yeah. Like,
yes.
And so being prioritized. So I went with Chicago Review Press, which is an independent publisher. And I also looked at their books and stuff, and they also were very much in alignment with the conversations that I have without, you know, with not drowning out people's voices and their views and their political views and things like that. So I ended up working with them, and then went into the writing process. And for me, that looks very much like a lot of isolation. I'm an introvert by nature, so I don't even like to write at home. I like to go to the woods and let me go all the way in. When I'm in writing mode, I don't want to care for nothing. I don't want to, like, I have two dogs who I love to the depths of me.
Babies.
But I don't want to make no food for y'all. I don't want to do none of that. Like, I need to just be totally in my bag, in my space. So it was a lot of that. My book was actually supposed to come out in November of 2022. I told them in the springtime, I'm not going to write a book when I'm under stress because I didn't want that to read into the book. So I actually extended it to March. And my publishing company, I'm like, you know, a little top shelf title for them. So,
love that. Like, we just have to celebrate just a little bit. That's a big
deal. Yes.
That's a real big
deal. So it's been like the support for them has been amazing. They've been very responsive. They're very, you know, my agent and my publishing company, they work together, they talk to each other. And I know it's not always that cohesive. But I would say, you know, my biggest advice is like staying true to yourself in the book. Like, whatever you want this book to be, not letting someone veer you from that because of it being more digestible or being more palatable for certain people. And really like checking out and doing the research around who is also at this agency, who is also at this publishing company. Like, will they be, is it, you know what I mean? Like, what's the vibe here? Is it my vibe? And then other than that, it's like the writing, just,
discipline. Discipline. Well, yeah. And you know what I appreciate about that, and before we get ready to wrap up, is that you really honored yourself. And the summit is about finding your authentic voice. And what you just described is about you finding, not only having your authentic voice represented in its totality, but also working with people that are in complete alignment with you and that are going to champion for you and advocate for you. So there was a lot of thought that you went in, and you weren't going to suffer through the process of birthing something so important to you. And I think that this is really critical for people to consider. You know, don't publish a book or try to get it published for the sake of getting it published. Really be mindful about all of the facets. And I imagine that the energy that you brought, and because you were so thoughtful, it made it easy for your agent and your publishing house to work together, because you had already vetted the right people that had the right heart. Right to approach.
And my agent, like, all of them was like, because, like, you know, with the book, I'm like, I'm green in the process. I'm new to, like, you know, I'm a first time book writer, author. But they were like, one thing about me is that I will tell them what I don't like. I may not always know what I like, but I know what I don't like.
Yeah.
And so if the vibe is not vibing, if I'm not feeling it, if it's going in a direction that doesn't feel like pure to me, feels authentic to me, I'm not doing it. And so it was very, it's very important for the folks that were in my circle, in my team, to understand that this book is community driven. It's not built for, you know, the top whoever. It's not built for that. And so it was a blessing to work with my team, the teams that I work with.
Yeah, that's clear. I love that so much. And so as we get ready to wrap up, and before folks know exactly how to stay in touch with you, follow your work, mm-hmm. your book, tell us a little bit, you know, drop a seed about Black luxury, right? So why Black luxury? Why is it important? And how can we embody it more in our lives?
Yes. So one thing that's very important to me as I do this work, as I said, like, I've been at the space where I've been doing this work and I was burnt out. I've been at the space where I was like, I don't ever want to feel that way again, right? And so one of the things I felt like was important, especially for me being a Black woman, there's this, you know, trope around Black women being like so strong and so this, and I'm already at organizing spaces, right? So they're like, oh, Black women know all the things, right? And they know how to persevere and all that kind of stuff. And I'm like, yeah, you're right. And... And I also need you to understand that I need rest and I need luxury. And luxury for me is not just about going to Dubai or whatever it is, but sometimes it's taking a choice to cancel a meeting. Like, not relevant. I need a break. My brain is not feeling this. I'm not doing that. It's the option for me to change my mind on my interests. It's the option for me to, like, my schedule is 3 weeks on, 2 weeks off. Right. So like in those 2 weeks, I may be doing work, but I'm not doing any front facing stuff. Like I'm an introvert. I love being behind the scenes. So, so it's like these intentional choices to care for myself in a radical way that is very specific to my Blackness and naming it. Mm-hmm. Right. So that when people work with me, when you go on my website, all of that, it says that up there.
Yeah. Yeah.
My email message, if you email me, it says like, hey, I work at the pace of my body, my health, my wellness, we will get back to you, but I'm not in a rush, right? So for me, it's really Black luxury. It's me taking my power back, claiming my time, claiming my essence, claiming what keeps me well, what keeps me thriving, and also letting you know that that is the standard as to which you treat me.
Yes. Yeah. Oh my God. You know, this interview has given me so much life. And I love all the ways that you stay in your power in your life to maintain your power, right? To be well in the midst of pouring so much of yourself out to the world. And you clearly model that. And I imagine that folks are really inspired to hear all of the ways that you show up and ensure that that is at the forefront. And so I just want to thank you again for this interview. I'm so glad that I found out about you, this amazing body of work that you put out in the world. You feel kindred. This feels kindred to me. I don't know how.
Yes, I agree. You,
but this feels very kindred to me. And I'm deeply grateful. Deeply grateful.
Same here. This has been a highlight of my day.
Mine too. I know for sure folks are going to want to stay in touch with you. They're going to want to mm-hmm. purchase your book and all the things. So let us know how we can go about doing that.
Yes. So easy starting point, if you're on the social medias, is Instagram, Sabia Wade. Most any social media, you can find me at Sabia Wade. It's usually only one of me. Yes. Go into my website, sabiawade.com, sign up for my newsletter. My Substack. So you'll get my Substack, you'll get notifications about the book and my book tours. And I write a lot of different articles about all the things that we talked about. I do a lot of podcasts, visualizations, meditations, and things like that. And I'm always, you know, feel free to DM me, email me, and reach out. I love actually getting feedback from people because I like to stay in the house. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I like to stay in the house. But
Which is part of your Black luxury.
Yes, like send me an email. I'm gonna respond back. But yeah, and I will be book touring. That is happening. Dates are always being posted on my social media and on my Substack. The thing to know about my book tour is that it's happening over the next year. So like, I'm not doing like 5 cities in a week. I'm not doing that. That's not a part of my ministry. That's not a part of my Black luxury. So very much moving at the pace of me, so that when I go into these spaces, I'm like excited to be there. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm coming to you in a, like a happy, fulfilled space. So
yeah.
That's how to reach me.
Oh my gosh. That was such a great way to leave us. Like you move at the space of you. And like that alone is so revolutionary. So many things about how you show up is truly revolutionary and very much connected to all things liberation. And so again, I am just deeply grateful. So y'all heard it here, the Women Who Write to Liberate Summit. This is one amazing talk out of 18 plus talks. And so make sure that you check all of them out. But before you do that, you make sure that you follow this amazing, amazing author, the work that she has put out in the world. We're going to make sure that you have all the links, all the ways that you can follow her, all the ways that you can purchase the book. And until next time, beautiful, beautiful people. Ashe.
Thank you.